content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello again, this is Randall Rickman from Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Time Magazine. This issue is dated April 1, 2019. And we go right to the back of the magazine so that we can include this week's interview feature. Time says the subject of the interview is Preet Bharara. Time says in his new book, Doing Justice, the former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York reflects on his career in an office now investigating the president. The name Preet Bharara is spelled, first name Preet, P-R-E-E-T, Bharara, B-H-A-R-A-R-A, Preet Bharara. And the interview feature this time is called 10 Questions, interview conducted by Tessa Berenson. First question. Your old office is handling multiple investigations into Donald Trump. Should that worry him more than Robert Mueller? Answer, yes. Unlike the special counsel's office, the Southern District does not have any kind of circumscribed mandate. They are not limited to issues related to collusion or obstruction or interference with the election of 2016. They can look at everything, and that includes bank fraud, tax fraud, money laundering, you name it. Question. What can the public expect to see when Mueller's investigation exits? Answer. If the report is devastating to the president, and there are people on earth who know, I don't see how you keep that from the public. If it's not so damaging, I assume Attorney General Bill Barr and others would rush to disclose it. The problem will be if it's a mixed bag. Expectations are set so high, it's almost going to be impossible to meet them unless there is a series of smoking guns. Question. Is impeachment a real threat to Trump's presidency? Answer. There is still some reluctance on the part of Democrats, all the way up to Nancy Pelosi, in pursuing the I word. Impeachment, people tend to forget, is only the making of an allegation. It's not proving anything. The Senate, as currently constituted, is not going to end Donald Trump's presidency. Question. Did the 2008 financial crisis contribute to the system is rigged political movement that helped elect Trump? Answer. A few things that Donald Trump said when he got elected are correct. He said some people have been forgotten. He's right. He said there's a swamp. He's right. He said a lot of the system is rigged. He's right. My point of disagreement is how you combat those things. Question. You didn't bring criminal cases against major executives for crimes that contributed to the financial crisis. Do you regret that? Answer. There was incredible frustration over the tanking of the economy. Everyone had every incentive to hold people accountable criminally. But you can't just charge people because you're angry. You can't bring a case unless you have the law and the facts on your side. And nobody in those circumstances found that to be so. Question. You teach a class at New York University School of Law. What principles do you try to pass on to the next generation of lawyers? Answer. Good judgment. Part of the point of the class is the same as the book, which is, you can have great laws, but if the people who are responsible for enforcing or interpreting them are bad people, they can find a million ways to cause miscarriages of justice. Question. Was there anyone you were nervous to interview? Answer. Jason Goldfarb, the only person who has come on the podcast that my office prosecuted. He committed insider trading offenses. It felt strange and unsettling to sit across the table from somebody whose indictment bore my name and went to prison. We can forget, and we shouldn't, that every defendant is a human being, too. Question. Who was on the top of your wish list to interview? Answer. I'll give you his first name. Bruce. Last question. Springsteen? Answer. Is there another Bruce? The highlight of my life was when he gave me a shout-out live at a concert. I almost fell off my chair. To this day, if I'm down, I'll find the YouTube clip and play it and giggle like a child. Entire interview conducted by Tessa Berenson with Preet Bharara. His new book, Doing Justice. Former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. Now we go to the beginning of the magazine and make sure that we get to the recurring feature called For the Record, a one-page collection of small news items, each one illustrated by a two-color drawing or a headline or caption in bold or a combination of the two. In the upper right corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Monica Lewinsky. Anti-bullying activist asked if she considered changing her name as it became shorthand for the scandal over her affair with President Bill Clinton. The quotation from Monica Lewinsky, quote, "Nobody's ever asked him, did he think he should change his name?" Unquote. In the middle right margin of the page is a story illustrated in red with the statistic 2 hours, 20 minutes, 51 seconds. Caption explains, time it took Thomas Panic to become the first blind runner to complete the New York City half marathon with the help of guide dogs. The time again in red, 2:20:51. That item is also accompanied by a red, black and white two-color drawing showing a likeness of Thomas Panic in his shorts and baseball cap running with red shoes, along with a guide dog who was looking up at him. And it's a drawing, and guide dog is wearing a red vest for guide dogs. In the lower right corner of the page is the feature within a feature, Bad Week, Good Week. At Bad Week, May, UK PM continues to face staunch opposition to her Brexit plan. Under Good Week, April, the internet-famous giraffe gave birth to her fifth calf on March 16th. Running along the bottom of the page is a story illustrated by the number in bright red, 88. Caption explains, weight in pounds of the plastic found in the belly of a dead whale that washed up in the Philippines on March 16th. 88 pounds. In the middle left margin of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Donald Trump, U.S. President, in response to a reporter's question about his criticism of the late senator at a March 19th press conference. The quotation from President Donald Trump, quote, "If I was never a fan of John McCain," I'll repeat that with correction and apologies. Quotation from President Donald Trump, quote, "I was never a fan of John McCain, and I never will be," unquote. In the upper left corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts U.S. Senator and 2020 Democratic presidential contender, at a March 18th CNN town hall. And the quotation from Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren in bright red, quote, "Get rid of the Electoral College," unquote. In the upper middle of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Karen Uhlenbeck, mathematician, on being a role model. The quotation from mathematician Karen Uhlenbeck, quote, "What you really need to do is show students how imperfect people can be and still succeed," unquote. Caption goes on to say, on March 19th, she was named the first woman to win the Abel Prize, a top award in the field. Abel is spelled A-B-E-L, Abel Prize. In the lower center of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Dani Toluwa Adewumi, 8-year-old Nigerian refugee and New York State Chess Championship winner. The quotation from Tantaluwa Adewumi, 8-year-old Nigerian chess champion, quote, "I feel American," unquote. Caption goes on to say, a crowdfunding campaign has raised more than $100,000 for his family, which is seeking asylum to move out of a New York City homeless shelter. And that was the entire content of the milestones page. Now we go into the brief, which is the major leading section of the magazine. The subsection here is the bulletin, and the headline is Hamas condemned over a violent crackdown on protests in Gaza. Article by Joseph Hinks. During mid-March, demonstrations against abject living conditions in the Gaza Strip, the Hamas-led government cracked down on residents of the 140-square-mile enclave, prompting condemnation from human rights organizations. As cell phone footage circulated online showing security forces clubbing protesters, a UN envoy said March 17th that Gaza's, quote, "long-suffering people," unquote, should have the right to express economic grievances without fear of reprisal. And here, Joseph Hinks mentions three category items. First item, quote, "We want to live," unquote. The Islamist group Hamas has ruled the Gaza Strip since 2007, when it fought a brief civil war against the secular Fatah party. In the past, protests over living conditions and human rights have targeted the West Bank-based Fatah, which says Hamas beat up its spokesman in the March clashes, and Israel, whose 12-year air, land, and sea blockade has strangled the Gazan economy. Parenthetically, Israel blames Gaza's poverty on Hamas's corruption and mismanagement. The sustained, quote, "We want to live," unquote, protests, which began March 14th, marked a rare challenge to Hamas leaders. Second item, quote, "Revolt of the hungry," unquote. Under slogans like, quote, "Revolt of the hungry," unquote, hundreds demonstrated against hikes in the prices of basic goods, devastating changes in a place where about half the 2 million residents live in poverty. Economists say the increases were driven by Hamas's raising import taxes in a bid to revive Gaza's collapsed economy. Authorities arrested dozens, raided homes, and used live fire to disperse crowds, rights groups say. The UN voiced concern over the, quote, "brutal beating of journalists," unquote. Final item, avoiding war? Question mark. March 14th separately saw the launch of two rockets fired from Gaza toward Tel Aviv, the first time the Israeli city has been targeted since 2014. In response, Israel's military said it struck 100 sites in Gaza, but also agreed with Hamas that the rockets had been fired by mistake. Many had feared an even larger retaliation by Israel, but analysts said both sides worked to prevent escalation. Israel, because it wants to avoid instability ahead of April 9th elections, and Hamas, because it cannot afford to do otherwise. Entire article by Joseph Hinks. On this page, in the right margin, is the recurring feature News Ticker, a collection of three news items stacked one on top of the other. Top item, Trump plans closer ties with Brazil. After a March 19th meeting with Brazil's far-right leader, Jair Bolsonaro, President Trump said he'd designate Brazil a major non-NATO ally, which would allow it to buy U.S. weapons more easily. Bolsonaro said the two countries share values like, quote, the fear of God, unquote, and opposition to, quote, political correctness, unquote. Middle item, Colorado backs popular vote plan. Colorado Governor Jared Polis signed a law on March 15th, pledging to allocate his state's electoral college votes to whoever wins the popular vote in the 2020 presidential election. 11 states and Washington, D.C. have signed on to the plan, which will take effect only if passed by enough states to represent at least 270 electoral votes. Bottom item. Italian opera returns Saudi funding. Italy's La Scala Opera House will give back more than $3.4 million to Saudi Arabia after a backlash from human rights groups, politicians, and the public to a funding deal with the kingdom, which would have given the Saudi culture minister a seat on the Milan venue's board. News ticker. Moving ahead, we are now at the milestones page. Lead item, under died, W.S. Merwin, Bard of the Ephemeral. Observance by Rita Dove. Time notes, Dove served as Poet Laureate of the U.S. from 1993 to 1995. Rita Dove writes, I first read and admired W.S. Merwin, who died at 91 on March 15th, long before I met him in the 1970s. In the 80s, we got to know each other at various literary events. By the time we were both poetry consultants for the Library of Congress's bicentennial in 1999, it was like meeting an old friend again. Once, while he was visiting the University of Virginia to give a reading, we were late for dinner and I was rushing when I suddenly noticed he wasn't beside me anymore. I turned around to find him at the edge of the parking lot, staring into the evening sky. What was wrong? I asked, and he replied, quote, Rita, don't you pay tribute to the moon when she comes out? Unquote. It might sound funny, but I realized what he meant. Stop and look around. Open yourself to wonder. There was just a wisp of a moon, and we stood there for a moment, quiet. His poems illuminate this covenant with the natural world. They've guided me in determining what should be important in a life, and in realizing that communication of the ineffable is part of the mission of poetry. Isn't that what every artist tries to do, to articulate that which eludes us? W.S. Merwin knew it and did it better than anyone I know. Rita Dove writing about W.S. Merwin. This item is accompanied by a full-color, half-length photograph of W.S. Merwin. Caption says, Merwin at his home, a palm tree preserve in Hawaii in 2010. W.S. Merwin, with white hair, is wearing a pale blue shirt. Under dyed, Birch Bai, advocate for equality. Observance by Abigail Abrams. She writes, gender equality in education. The right to vote for those old enough to fight. The process that allows for removing a sitting president. Those fundamental aspects of modern America were all shaped by Birch Bai, a liberal Democrat from Indiana. Bai, who served three terms as a senator and died March 14th at 91, was one of the most influential and productive legislators of his time. When President John F. Kennedy was assassinated soon after Bai entered the Senate, in 1963, he created the 25th Amendment to establish procedures for presidential succession. Bai then wrote the 26th Amendment, lowering the voting age to 18, and championed the Equal Rights Amendment. When the ERA looked likely to fail, he wrote Title IX and sponsored the 1972 law, which has protected women's rights on athletic fields and in classrooms ever since. Quote, if you give a person an education, whether it's a boy or girl, young woman or young man, unquote, he would say 40 years later, quote, they will have the tools necessary to make a life for families and themselves, unquote. Abigail Abrams on Birch Bai. This item is accompanied by a black-and-white headshot of Birch Bai, presumably while he was in the U.S. Senate. Under dyed, Mexican journalist Santiago Barroso, at 47, on March 15th. He was shot in his home in Sonora, likely as a result of his work, the state attorney said. Under dyed, Okui Inwezor, influential Nigerian curator who pushed the art world to embrace a more global view, at 55 on March 15th. Under withdrew, the Philippines from the International Criminal Court on March 17th, as the tribunal probes killings linked to President Rodrigo Duterte. It becomes the second country to leave the court after Burundi. Under approved, the first drug specifically for postpartum depression by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on March 19th. Under raised, $6.1 million in the first 24 hours of his 2020 presidential run by Democrat Beto O'Rourke. According to his campaign, more than any other contender has disclosed. Under resigned, Kazakhstan's president, Nursultan Nazarbayev, on March 19th. He came to power in 1989, when the country was still part of the Soviet Union. Under filed, a $250 million lawsuit against Twitter and three users by Representative Devin Nunes, who alleges the platform allowed him to be defamed as a result of political bias. The entire contents of Milestones. On the facing page is another version of the sidebar feature news ticker, again with three news items stacked one on top of the other. Top item, U.S. doctors change aspirin guidelines. Two U.S. Associations of Heart Doctors, issued new guidance on March 17th, reversing long-standing advice that many adults should take aspirin daily. It should be used to prevent cardiovascular problems in high-risk patients only, they now say, as the risk of internal bleeding outweighs the benefits for most adults. In case you missed that, I will repeat that. Aspirin should be used to prevent cardiovascular problems in high-risk patients only, they say, as the risk of internal bleeding outweighs the benefits for most adults. Second item, Japanese Olympic chief resigns. Tunekazu Takeda, head of Japan's Olympic Committee, said March 19th that he would resign in June amid allegations of corruption in Tokyo's winning bid for the 2020 Games. French prosecutors are investigating possible bribes worth $2 million. Takeda denies any wrongdoing. Final item, Disney buys 21st Century Fox. Disney closed a $71.3 billion deal to buy 21st Century Fox on March 19th, thus combining two of Hollywood's best-known businesses and giving Disney control of Fox's movie and TV studios, FX Networks, National Geographic, and Fox's stake in Hulu. The consolidation may eliminate 4,000 jobs. And moving ahead, and we are now looking at the brief subsection called Health, where the headline is, as kids get addicted to e-cigs, treatment options are slim, by Jamie Ducharme. Until recently, Dr. Jonathan Avery, an addiction psychiatrist at New York Presbyterian Weill Cornell Medical Center, rarely treated adolescents for nicotine addiction. After years of plummeting youth smoking rates, quote, we thought we were winning the game on cigarettes, unquote, Avery says. But e-cigarettes, which can each contain as much nicotine as a pack of cigarettes, have exploded in popularity, causing what the Food and Drug Administration, parenthetically FDA, is calling an, quote, epidemic, unquote, among young people. More than 20% of high school students use e-cigs, even though they are legal only for adults. Quote, suddenly, there's all sorts of young people looking for treatment, wondering what to do, unquote, Avery says. E-cigarette use has far outpaced science when it comes to finding treatments for nicotine dependence. Without specific treatment standards for young patients, clinicians often turn teens away or try nicotine replacement therapies like patches and gum, even though they're designed for adults and haven't been proved to be effective against e-cigarette dependence. Quote, there are no treatment guidelines yet for these products, unquote, says Donna Richardson, clinical coordinator of the Rutgers Tobacco Dependence Program. Quote, we have nothing else, unquote. But demand is growing. The FDA is so concerned about youth e-cigarette addiction that this year it began looking into ways to help kids quit. In January, the anti-tobacco group Truth Initiative launched a text-based e-cigarette cessation program for young people. 31,000 people have registered, the group says. Most parents are looking for insurance-covered outpatient care, which, quote, just sort of doesn't exist, unquote, Avery says. This year, he started a counseling-based treatment program for adolescents with e-cig dependence and has treated about 30 kids so far. Soon he expects to have company. Quote, "It's probably going to be picking up everywhere," unquote, he says. Quote, "A lot of us in the addiction world are paying attention to this," unquote. Entire article by Jamie Ducharme. Going ahead, still in the brief, we are now in Time With, and this week it's Eliza Dushku. Time explains how Eliza Dushku is taking back the power after her Me Too story. Dushku is spelled D-U-S-H-K-U, Eliza Dushku. Story conducted and interview conducted by Eliana Docterman. She writes, "This is an unusual interview. I am not meeting Eliza Dushku in a Beverly Hills restaurant or a Soho hotel bar where celebrity profiles are usually set. Instead, I find her in a coffee shop just off Harvard Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Inside, students in hoodies hunch over their laptops. Dushku has become one of these sweatshirt-clad students. She's studying holistic psychology, a therapeutic modality that integrates mind, body, and spirit at Lesley University. After nearly 30 years working in Hollywood, Dushku says she's been getting a lot of calls from friends, a tinge of concern in their voices. Quote, so you're in Boston? Unquote. Yes, she is. Because Dushku has been thinking a lot lately about the narrative of her life, and she's decided that learning more about how to heal others is her next step. That queasy feeling women who've experienced harassment get every time they hear a new Me Too story, she wants to study that because she's experienced it. A lot. Dushku has played plenty of tough women on screen. A rebellious vampire slayer on Buffy, a foul-mouthed cheerleader in Bring It On, and a savvy lawyer on the CBS show Bull. But off-screen, she's been to hell and back. She says she was molested as a child actor on the set of True Lives. For years, she struggled with addiction. Most recently, she was fired from Bull after she complained that her co-star, Michael Weatherly, had sexually harassed her. And she had hard evidence. Astonishingly, Weatherly made lewd comments while cameras were rolling. CBS paid her a $9.5 million settlement, a fraction of what she would have made had she been able to complete a proposed 6-year contract. Quote, I have never been this nervous for an interview, unquote, she says. Quote, I've always been outspoken and honest, but I'm not used to being this vulnerable, unquote. I want to talk about the sexual harassment. It's the reason I took a 7 a.m. train to Boston. But that's the other unusual aspect of this interview. Dushku can't discuss the incidents or the settlement. In order to be paid for the work she already had done, she agreed to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Nobody would have known about Weatherly's alleged behavior, how she says he played Barracuda on his phone when she walked by, how he would declare that he wanted to have a threesome with her, and yelled, quote, I will take you over my knee and spank you like a little girl, unquote, when she flubbed a line, if it weren't for CBS's systemic harassment problem. That is a complex sentence. I will read the section concerning that question only. In order to be paid for the work she had already done, she agreed to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Nobody would have known about Weatherly's alleged behavior if it weren't for CBS's systemic harassment problem. This time, we skipped all the particulars. Moving on. In August, The New Yorker published an article chronicling then-CEO Les Moonves' alleged sexual misconduct, leading the network to fire him and launch an internal investigation of the company culture. Details of that inquiry, which concluded, among other things, that CBS's handling of Dushku's case, quote, was misguided, unquote, leaked to the New York Times. Dushku couldn't comment to the paper because of her NDA. But once she saw Bull showrunner Glenn Gordon Caron and Weatherly had given quotes, despite their settlement terms, she wrote an op-ed about her experience for the Boston Globe. But she fears that talking about the complaint further could incite litigation. We can talk around it and about how much she wants to make clear that she has not been exiled from Hollywood. She lost a parent in her hometown of Boston 4 years ago and moved back after 18 years in L.A. She always wanted to get a college degree here, where her mom taught at Suffolk University for 47 years. But the child star thing happened, so now at 38, she's back in school. She's living just blocks from where she grew up, where she plans to raise the baby she will soon have with her new husband. The first movie she produced, Mapplethorpe, is out now. Quote, I need the distance to recalibrate and start a family, unquote, she says. Quote, but I don't want people to think coming forward means ending your career. I could be acting. I just need to be here right now, unquote. There is more to this article, but in the interest of including more material elsewhere in the magazine, we do move on. And we do so now at the next section, The View, where the subsection is Parenting, where the headline is, Put That Phone Away Now. When I talk to parents about my research on teens and technology, their questions often boil down to this. Is it bad for my teen to be spending so much time on electronic devices? Recently, several analyses have said that the research on this front is a mess or that there is no connection to mental health. Don't believe them. That is the opening page statement from the author of this article, Jean M. Twenge. Twenge is spelled T-W-E-N-G-E. And going to the article. In fact, four large studies of teens from the U.S. and U.K. all show the same thing. Happiness and mental health are highest at a half hour to 2 hours of extracurricular digital media use a day. Well-being then steadily decreases, with those who spend the most time online being the worst off. Twice as many heavy users of electronic devices are unhappy, depressed, or distressed as light users. So why the confusion? The articles concluding the research as a wash share one thing. They present the results using an obscure statistic called, quote, percent variance explained, unquote, which measures how much a single factor can explain differences in outcomes across a population compared with the effects of all other possible factors. Often, this minimizes the association between a factor and an outcome, especially an uncommon outcome. In the original Salk trials, the polio vaccine explained a tiny 0.0001% of the variance in whether children got polio. But unvaccinated children were over 3 times as likely to get polio as vaccinated children. A Major League Baseball player's skill has been found to explain less than 1% of the variance in the outcome of an at-bat. Similarly, electronic device use explains only 0.5% to 2% of the variance in suicide attempts. But twice as many teens who use devices 5 or more hours a day have attempted suicide as those who do so for 1 hour. And in the real world, percent variance is irrelevant. Parents are not keeping a tally of how much of their kids' happiness is linked to technology use compared with uncontrollable factors like genetics and past trauma. Instead, they want to know whether too much tech time is linked to depression, and all of the large studies show this is true. Again, there is more to this article, but we move on. The Time staff also says Jean Twenge is a professor of psychology at San Diego State University and the author of iGen. Also on this page is the recurring sidebar feature called Short Reads. Time explains highlights from stories on time.com/ideas. They list 3 excerpts. Top excerpt: Hopes for a Little Black Girl. Damon Young, author of the new book What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker, worries about the day his daughter will ask him how to become all she wants to be, given what she will learn about how black people are treated in America. He doesn't know the answer, he writes, but, quote, I know it's possible, unquote. Second item, improving meetings. Vice President of Design at Facebook, Julie Zhuo, who wrote the new book, The Making of a Manager, offers advice for turning meetings into more than a, quote, necessary evil, unquote. It includes 2 questions to ask before initiating one. Quote, what is a great outcome for this meeting? Unquote. And, quote, which people are necessary to make that outcome happen? Unquote. Bottom item, greater numbers. When we celebrate Pi on March 14th, we perhaps overvalue it, argues Times' Chris Wilson. Instead, he suggests we create holidays for other numbers, like E, which helps us understand so much, quote, from the strings on a piano or your retirement fund, unquote. 3 excerpts from time.com/ideas. On the facing page, the recurring feature, The Risk Report, where the headline is, China welcomes Italy into its sphere of influence, unnerving the EU and U.S. by Ian Bremmer. 13 European countries have already declared themselves open for Chinese business, but the 14th has both Brussels and Washington on edge. Chinese President Xi Jinping is traveling to Rome in late March to officially welcome Italy into his ambitious Belt and Road Initiative, a Chinese-backed plan to unite East and West with railways, ports, tunnels, and other infrastructure projects, and transform China's economic strength at home into undisputed geopolitical power abroad. While China has already made inroads into various Eastern European countries, signing up Italy, the Eurozone's third-largest economy and a G7 member, has pushed concerns about China's potential to splinter Europe from the periphery to the core, literally and figuratively. On March 12th, the EU's executive body published a paper branding China a, quote, systemic rival, unquote, and urging stronger oversight of its investments in Europe. Even the White House has telegraphed its concerns, with a spokesperson commenting that there is, quote, no need for the Italian government to lend legitimacy to China's infrastructure vanity project, unquote. But absent an alternative proposed by Washington or the EU, Italy is set to become the first G7 country to enroll in China's signature foreign policy initiative, one that takes square aim at a post-World War II geopolitical order that's already unraveling. This is not the first time worries about the relations between specific EU countries and foreign powers have raised alarm. Russia has also made overtures to certain European countries, but the European leadership could rely on the fact that the EU's combined economic heft far outweighed whatever meager economic benefits Russia's submerging economy had to offer. Brussels cannot say the same about Beijing. Again, there is more to this article, but again, we move on. And now, we are at a story that was mentioned on the cover of the magazine. The headline here, The Making of AOC by Charlotte Alter. How a 29-year-old rookie is transforming politics. It's almost always a harmless fan, one of dozens who arrive each day. Every 10 minutes or so, someone knocks on the big wooden door of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's office on Capitol Hill. The noise makes staffers stiffen. In her first 3 months in Congress, aides say, enough people have threatened to murder Ocasio-Cortez. The Capitol Police trained her staff to perform risk assessments of her visitors. This is the daily reality for America's newest human Rorschach test, Wonder Woman of the left, Wicked Witch of the right. Ocasio-Cortez has become the second most talked about politician in America after the President of the United States. Since beating 10-term incumbent Joe Crowley in the Democratic primary to represent New York's 14th District last June, The 29-year-old former bartender has pressured 2020 presidential candidates into supporting her Green New Deal, made campaign finance reform go viral, and helped activists banish Amazon from Queens with a couple of tweets. No lawmaker in recent memory has translated so few votes into so much political and social capital so quickly. Her Twitter following has climbed from about 49,000 last summer to more than 3.5 million. Thousands of people tune in to watch her make black bean soup or repot her houseplants on Instagram Live. Immediately after she tweeted the name of her signature red lipstick, Bizzo by Stila, it sold out online. At the same time, she's a freshman legislator trying to get the hang of her first big full-time job. Quote, I miss being able to go outside in sweats, unquote, she says, in her office one day in March, settling into a black leather chair after a long day of subcommittee hearings. She's much smaller than she looks on TV, with a warm but cautious manner. Moving ahead, the author of the article includes and features and isolates a quotation from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in red, quote, an entire generation came of age and never saw American prosperity, unquote. Author also includes another quotation in red, quoting political consultant Joel Benenson, quote, America isn't her district. Democrats shouldn't take the bait, unquote. Young Americans have become increasingly attracted to democratic socialism, which aims to build a stronger social safety net through democratic elections. After Sanders' rise in the 2016 Democratic primaries, membership in the Democratic Socialists of America, parenthetically DSA, soared from fewer than 10,000 members in early 2016 to more than 55,000 by 2019. A 2018 Harvard poll found that 39% of young Americans favor democratic socialism, and even young Americans who don't identify with the movement overwhelmingly support ideas like Medicare for all, tuition-free public college, and a Green New Deal. The DSA endorsed Ocasio-Cortez, and young enthusiastic volunteers stormed her district in the weeks leading up to the election. In the end, she beat Crowley by about 4,000 votes. The upset made her the new face of the young progressive movement. Within weeks, she was traveling the country, speaking to packed rooms and standing ovations as she stumped for candidates in Kansas, Missouri, and Michigan in the 2016 primaries. And yet, most of the campaigns Ocasio-Cortez supported ended up losing. Of 78 candidates endorsed by Justice Democrats in 2018, only four non-incumbents won their seats, all replacing other Democrats in deep blue districts. Moving ahead, yet the attention she gets has also prompted plenty of grumbling from colleagues. Quote, "You could go a day without writing a story about AOC," unquote, groused Representative Mark Pocan, a co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and a co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. Many Democrats argue that proposals like the Green New Deal, a non-binding resolution that won't become law with Republicans in control of the Senate and the White House, put Democrats in purple districts in a tough spot. And I will repeat that sentence without the middle phrase for clarity. Many Democrats argue that proposals like the Green New Deal put Democrats in purple districts in a tough spot. 90 House Democrats have signed on to it, but others who care about climate change are wary of backing a document that contains provisions like a jobs guarantee that put off moderates and tee up GOP attacks. At the recent Conservative Political Action Conference, former Trump advisor Sebastian Gorka described the proposal a, quote, watermelon, unquote, because it was, quote, green on the outside, deep, deep communist red on the inside. Freshman Democrats representing conservative districts, including Representatives Abigail Spanberger of Virginia and Ben McAdams of Utah, have been asked about socialism at their town halls. Capitol Hill's traditional emphasis on civility and compromise, she thinks, is merely a delay tactic. Quote, "There are always these folks that will say, you're not wrong, but," she says, rolling her eyes, quote, "they avoid the political liability of disagreeing with you, but also they can stall you as much as possible to actually prevent the thing from happening," unquote. So evaluating Ocasio-Cortez's success depends on the time frame in which she is judged. Will she help deliver Medicare for all and a Green New Deal in the next 2 years? No. But having the debate is already making a difference in how D.C. does business. Quote, "I used to be much more cynical about how much was up against us," unquote, she says. Quote, "I think I've changed my mind because I think the change is a lot closer than we think," unquote. Time mentions, in addition to Alter, with reporting by Elena Abramson, Dateline, Washington. Moving ahead, and the section here is business, where the headline is Secondhand Safety by W.J. Hennigan. Investigators probe the FAA and Boeing after two deadly crashes. Last May, Congress obtained a worrying internal memo written by the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Transportation. The IG's investigators had been probing the safety records of two airlines, but as the officials dug in, they found a broader issue that affected the manufacture and daily operations of most of America's airlines. The Federal Aviation Administration, parenthetically FAA, which since 1958 has ensured the safety of the U.S. aviation industry, had in recent years shifted its, quote, oversight strategy, unquote, the IG reported. Instead of, quote, emphasizing enforcement actions, unquote, the IG wrote, the FAA was taking an ever more hands-off approach, working with private industry, quote, to address the root causes for noncompliance of safety regulations, unquote. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. We hope you've gained a lot from it, and please be sure to listen next time. This is your loyal reader, Randall Rickman, for Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, Triangle Radio, correction, another mistake by your reader, website, TriangleReadingService.org. That's TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Number again, 919-832-5138. This is your loyal, dedicated, and ever-humbled reader, Randall Rickman, thanking you for joining us, and we hope you will be with us next time for Time